And welcome to another exciting entry in our webinar series. We're back to Mythos again today as part of our series of webinars touching upon that topic that everyone is still talking about and looking at how they can address. So we're going to get further into the weeds, as we promised, on how we should approach it from a cybersecurity perspective. I know there's many organizations looking further than that, the business use and beyond, but today it's all about cybersecurity, as it should be for one of our webinars. Today we are joined by our partner Qualys on this. I'm sure most of you know of Qualys and as the leader in exposure management and risk management. But Qualys brings very much some real insights into the core and inner threats from AI or frontier AI models, should I say, like Mythos, which will only expand as others catch up between OpenAI, Grok, and even open source, rapidly on the heels of Mythos. And actually, they're going to be able to bring, and I say they, and I'll come on to introducing my guest very shortly, bring those insights even further, but I won't give the spoiler away just yet. So really that leaves me with the job of introducing my guest for today on the webinar. And that is Matt Middleton-Leal. Matt is the RVP for Northern Europe at Qualys. He's got 20 years spent working in the security industry and brings significant experience to his role at Qualys. He worked for many organizations specializing in areas such as risk management, identity and access, application, network, and database security. And that's across organizations like Netrix, CyberArk, and IBM. So, Matt, very welcome to the webinar today.
Thanks for the introduction, Richard. Great to
No
be here. Looking
problem.
forward to it.
Excellent. So just before we kick off in earnest, the usual call outs. Obviously, we will be running a Q&A as part of this. So there'll be a Q&A session at the very end, but please use the Q&A function in your webinar's menu bar. If you can't find it, if it's not straight in front of you, just press those three dots and you should be able to get to the Q&A. Please ask questions throughout and then we will answer those at the very end. As always, we are recording this webinar. So if you need to watch back, it'll be available and will be shared, and also the opportunity to share it with any colleagues of should they wish to, and whether you deem that actually it'll be important for them to watch, which I'm sure you will. And then lastly, if you want to take advantage of it, there are translated captions again available from the from that WebEx menu bar. Sorry, WebEx, Zoom. You can tell I was on a WebEx yesterday. So let's start with some audience participation and with a poll question. We will have another poll question a little bit later on. As Rebecca, if you could just launch the poll for me there. So the question is, have you been asked to report on Mythos to your board, or have you had others in the organization asking for that input for board reporting? So we'll just give it 10, 15 seconds or so to allow people to answer. Nice, easy answers there. Very binary, yes or no. I'm just allowing those to build up. So I tell you what, Rebecca, we'll stop the poll there and we can obviously share the results. And actually, I am very, very surprised at the outcome of that poll, with only 20% of people saying yes. And the reason why I'm surprised is because the amount of customers I've had reach out looking for assistance, looking for input, because they are asked exactly around that topic, a report on Mythos that's being asked for by the board, primarily because it's so visible and such a level of concern over the last, what is it? It was probably March that that we saw the release and announcement. So at least the last 3 months or more. So Matt, I mean, look, that's I don't know from your perspective. I assume that's you're seeing very, very similar and have a similar level of surprise there.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think it's safe to say I'm likewise getting dragged round Europe in terms of carrying out these briefings where people just need some answers, need some evidence to kind of help them, articulate what the reality is of the situation. So yeah, a little bit surprising, but hey, it's good to have a different view.
Well, no, indeed. And I think over the course of the last two webinars, we've done on Mythos, and I'm sure there'll be a third. Hopefully, all those answers will be nice and clear. So, thank you for those for the poll results there, Rebecca. And Matt, I'm going to hand over control to yourself now to walk us through
Great.
your view of Mythos.
Okay. So thanks for that. Richard, you actually mentioned something at the start, so I'm going off piste already, but I haven't even shown a slide yet. You mentioned this is a cybersecurity briefing, which obviously it is, but I think as I go through my slides today, you're going to see that actually it's a IT challenge we're facing, and actually we're going to have to change the way we organizationally look at some of the problem statements. So, but I'll explain what I mean as we go through. So let's check I can drive the slides. Here we go. Right. So why am I here? What knowledge do I bring to this table? So we're very fortunate at Qualys that as part of phase two of Project Glasswing, we were invited to join and become a partner. I think it was about 100 companies globally that were invited to join, and we are one of those. What that means is that we get access to the model, obviously. It would be very short-sighted of us to only have access to a single model. So not only did we join that project, we also joined the OpenAI Cyber 5.5 model, of which we have unrestricted access. And that gives us some really great insights into the challenges that you all will be facing going forward. And it helps us to start plan ahead and look at the risks that are going to be coming, if not now, in the next few months. So we need to be very aware of this. Now, the fact is that this rise in vulnerabilities is going to be a serious impact on the National Vulnerability Database. We all know it's had funding problems. We know that it's struggling to keep up. And those problems are just going to get infinitely worse in the short period. Will that kind of burst of new vulnerabilities die down over time? Time will tell. But the reality is, we are going to see challenges in the short term. But actually, I think this is an opportunity for us all as an industry to potentially look at the way we do things and change for the better some of the problems that we've had driving organizational process change and adoption. This might be the time for us to look at that seriously. So, we've seen vulnerabilities growing 6.5x over the last 4 years, which is concerning. What that's going to look like in 12 months' time, I wouldn't like to comment just yet, but we're already seeing some pretty significant releases coming, 16x in certain vendors in terms of the volumes of vulnerabilities they're releasing. Now, if you actually look at that historic data as well, and you look at, and this is a key statistic here, that it was actually taking on average 18 days, the mean time to remediate was 18 days just for critical vulnerabilities. So if you accelerate the release, that problem's going to get infinitely worse. And this is really where we're going to dive down in today and work out what it is we can do about this challenge.
Yeah, and they are, as you say, absolutely huge numbers. So I think that's one of the things that even when I think it was generally researching around Mythos, that surprise of and obviously this is out of date information now of some 10,000 vulnerabilities discovered up until that point through Project Glasswing. And as you say, some vendors, I think Palo Alto, off the top of my head, their patching and the number of patches they're releasing has increased tenfold. And as you say, there's some even bigger increases. So the evidence is definitely there that vulnerability discovery is going to increase, the need to patch is going to increase, but also the ability to exploit if we can't keep pace.
Yeah, I mean, we're not keeping pace today, right?
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Well, actually, do you know what, that is,
But
that is probably a key point. The problem we've got is just going to be, it's going to be a bigger problem. So.
yeah, but the problem isn't changing. So I'll just throw that out there. We're not here to kind of share fear, uncertainty, and doubt with the community. We're here to give some practical ideas. So, but we'll
Yeah.
come on to that. Okay, so before I go into any more detail, just for your own kind of knowledge in terms of what we're doing, I mentioned that we have access to Anthropic and to OpenAI's models. So the first thing Qualys obviously did, no surprises here, is we actually tested the models on our own code. Now, the great thing was for us is it didn't actually come back with anything. So, we big sigh of relief there, frankly, but it did give us the ability to do that. Now, what we can't do is we cannot use those models to test the security of our customers. Obviously, that's their business model, that's their commercial viability. So, and there's some pretty big numbers being thrown around for end users to get access to those models to actually scan their own code. Ultimately, that their game is to burn tokens, and the more scanning people do, the more tokens you'll burn, and that's their business model. So, but it has given us the ability to confirm that our code is secure, which is, as I said, a big sigh of relief. Now, the other side of that, which is actually for me way more important and way more fundamental to helping our customer base and the community, is how can we use those models to increase the velocity of our threat research? How quickly can we analyze threats? Now, if we cannot analyze and classify threats at the speed at which they're being detected, there's going to be a problem. If you look at kind of average release dates across the various vendor community, not just Qualys, it was anything from 12, 36, 48 hours from a new vulnerability being released to some sort of signature or detection being released for your security products. Now, in a world where detection's in real time at AI speed, we need to be able to define that in the platforms that you're using to secure yourselves at a similar speed. Will it be the same? Of course not. But how much can we shrink that window? Can we get it down to sub 10 minutes in terms of detection to a release being identified in your platform so you can start making the appropriate steps? And this is where vendors like us are going to really start to benefit from this and helping the community. So we're really excited about the potential for this. We're already testing its capabilities, and we're already releasing signatures based on this methodology, and that will only improve as time goes on. So, as I said, this is the real win, I think, for us as a security industry.
Yeah, I don't know if you've got any sort of feedback from the teams that are doing it in terms of their view of it. I mean, like as you called out, putting Qualys source code, and I assume that anybody that get access to it, that's the reason for doing it, to help identify those vulnerabilities. And I guess it's a great pat on the back that that nothing major was found. But does that sort of dial down the hype to a certain extent in terms of its capability, not taking away the security coding practices that you guys have, and really what I'm getting at, is there any kind of feedback on actually the quality and the capability of this frontier model versus Opus 4.8?
I think that the ability for the code to find issues that, frankly, I think we all know some of them were very, very old issues. I'm using issues because I don't think they were real risks, but they've been there for 10 years and no one had exploited them. And we're going to come on to a slide about exploitability in a moment. So is it helping? Yes. Is it a major difference? Probably not in reality. But there's one big caveat here. What the models are very, very good at is chaining vulnerabilities. So building a virtual attack path, if you like, through an organization's infrastructure and pulling together maybe two CVEs, which maybe one was low, one was medium, which as an organization you might never look at. You might not get to it in your patching strategy, but chaining those together to make something far more risky. And I think that's where the models are good, and that's where the risk is going to come. Not per se in scanning code, it's about its ability to chain risk together, but also, dare I say, dumb down the skills needed to do that. And that is very worrying.
Yeah, I think that we already see that with AI in current guises, being able to artificially inflate capabilities of people to be able to carry out attacks. And you're right, that's something that we'll see more of.
Move on one slide. So, I mentioned just now that the number of vulnerabilities you actually need to be concerned about. So this is some research that Qualys does, and we actually publish this. So this is the list of vulnerability releases prior to the models being released, the Anthropics, etc. So if you actually look at the number of disclosures, and you can see that in 2025, nearly 50,000 vulnerabilities disclosed, which is a huge number, frankly. But actually, when you analyze that, when I mean analyze that, we put into that, we put threat intel, we put our own researchers, we've got about 300 researchers which are analyzing this data. When you actually look at that, only 357 of that 48,000 were ever weaponized in 2025. So actually, when you're looking at where the risk is in your business, you can actually really start to dial down and look at your organizational patching strategies and say, where do I need to spend my dollars, my pounds, my euros? Where do I need to look at spending those to actually reduce risk? So you cannot look at this from a pure numbers perspective because it's an elephant that we're not going to be able to eat. Now, what I'm not saying is that you shouldn't fix them all, because obviously, in a perfect world, we would fix them all. But the reality is, we only have a certain amount of resources, and we need to be able to focus on those which create the most risk. Now, of course, 2026 numbers could look very different. And this is what we don't know yet. The early indicators and the research we're doing suggest that there will be more weaponized vulnerabilities amongst the disclosures. And then maybe they're not be individually, maybe they're chained vulnerabilities, as I mentioned in the previous slide, but there will be more. We don't expect this number to increase dramatically because we don't think the code is going to be that buggy, for want of a better expression, but it will increase. The number of disclosures are going to increase. So that 48,000, maybe that'll double. But even if that doubles, the number of weaponized vulnerability tripled. We still, when we look at it through this lens, we still have a number which is achievable from an operational perspective to actually address. Now, this is when I, Richard, when I joked at the start, we need to look at IT operations. This is where we start bring IT operations and say, hey, this is not a security problem. This is a business problem that we need to address together. So I think it's super important to kind of look at these numbers and understand what the true risk is to your business and understand whether you are actually exposed or not. Because that's the other thing. When the models find stuff, doesn't mean you're exposed. We've all spent money on compensating controls. We've got EDR, we've got firewalls, you name it. And many of these tools will be protecting us. But how do we make sure that these compensating controls are actually effective? And that's going to be the key benchmark of how we move forward.
Yeah, no. I think, like I say, there's plenty of, the chances are the percentages will stay relatively the same. And we talk about the CTEM framework that Gartner coined. A lot of that was actually defining the scope and prioritizing what we need to focus on. Now, I think there's some challenges around some compliance requirements that that are quite general in terms of. Vulnerability remediation that I think puts a lot of pressure on there. But the only way to combat this, as you say, is to actually prioritize what actually creates that risk. You might have a hugely critical vulnerability and something that's entirely internal that other systems need to be compromised and before you get there. So I think being able to gauge that is critically important.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's not to say that doesn't need patching, but maybe that's not the one that needs
Yeah.
patching right now.
Well, there's, without diving into the kind of patching strategies too deeply, but that's where you come onto these things is what can wait for maintenance windows and what do you have to patch outside of those windows, and that's really where we're getting to. But we'll probably come onto that. I'm sure we will. Interesting piece of research in the 2026 Verizon breach. You mentioned, Richard, that I do have a background in identity, and when I was in that, we spent a lot of time, on kind of detailed threat analysis in terms of the breaches that were occurring, and the vast majority of these were being done via some form of credential theft. So it's super interesting to see in the most recent report how credential theft appears to have dropped. But exploitation of vulnerabilities seems to have increased. And again, this research was done prior to the models being released. So, we can assume, based on the noise we hear in the marketplace and the research being done, that, these figures are probably going to increase slightly. I'm not expecting a massive increase, I'll be honest with you, but I am expecting that number to increase from the exploitation of vulnerabilities. But, you know, the ability for hackers, we've already mentioned hackers with low skill base, to utilize those vulnerabilities to carry out more nefarious attacks, you know, it will increase naturally. You know, they will be scanning constantly, looking for access and openings in organization environments. So, you know, you mentioned that exposure management. We do really need to move to a model where we are continuously testing our defenses at kind of machine speed. I mean, that is going to be the only defense here.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned it you know, last week or the week before. Yeah, if I had a view on this this chart, I'd say credential abuse, you know, is probably on the down because more people are getting more savvy with not with you know, the lack of password reuse. But if that was just purely the case, you'd see all those other lines going up on a similar trend to vulnerability exploitation, which isn't the case. That's so it's, you know, it's soaring up there. But yeah, for everything we've talked about. So Joe, and I think it probably will carry on that trajectory over the next year or so.
I think the other angle to this as well is that every business now is an IT business in some way, shape, or form. Even a taxi driver now relies on technology to take payments. So actually, everyone is utilizing technology in some way, shape, or form. And that explosion of IT, if you like, out to the masses, is impacting this because code is everywhere. You know,
Yeah.
literally everyone relies on code in some way, shape, or form. So the more that kind of utilization expands, the more vulnerabilities will naturally appear, and therefore the more abilities or the more openings there are for poor people to carry out these kind of attacks. So I think that trend is not going to change. You know, we are going to continue to rely on technology. And just look at our cars, right? I mean, if you lift the bonnet of the car, I've got no idea what's going on underneath the bonnet anymore. It's just a mass of wires from what I can see. So you know, so if you bring OT into this, etc., you know, cars, fridges, you name it, all of these things are code based now, and it's going to add to this vulnerability stack.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, let's move on. I believe we have another poll.
We do. Brings us to our second poll, which is how confident are you that your organization can remediate critical vulnerabilities before attackers exploit them? And that's probably today, actually. Are you know, very confident, confident, somewhat confident, or not confident at all? I'm just looking at those votes coming in. Interesting that nobody's clicked the very confident. Oh, there you go. There's somebody's clicked it. Obviously, feeling it was a little bit lonely. But we'll just give it a couple of more seconds there. But yeah, I think it's, you know, already when we see the results starting to come in on here. And Rebecca, I don't know if you want to publish those results now. You know, we can see that, you know, we're neck and neck between confident and, you know, not confident at all. But most of the votes directly in the somewhat confident. So I think that fits very much with, you know, the numbers that you presented earlier, Matt. That, you know, being able to remediate those vulnerabilities is, you know, is a challenge everybody's is experiencing.
Yeah, look, I can tell you from our experience, you know, we obviously, you know, we spend a lot of time with our customers, and every single customer we talk to is pretty good, or so they think, at patching things like Microsoft. You know, they have their Patch Tuesday cycles, etc. When there's a new kind of release of Windows, whatever it may be, they're pretty good at patching that. However, when you actually look into the detail, it's always the devil's always in the detail, right? We typically find anything between 10 and 20% of vulnerabilities in an estate are old Microsoft vulnerabilities. So these are things which just get left behind. It may be the fact that it's not just about a patch, there may be some other process required, like a registry change, or even as simple as a reboot. You wouldn't believe the volumes of vulnerabilities that exist purely because no one's rebooted after the patch. That the next bucket, if you like, are normally there's normally about another 20 plus percent, which are things like Zoom. browsers, Wireshark, you name it, right? There's all these third-party applications which actually no one typically truly owns in an organization. So you get this continuing buffer of vulnerabilities which gets stacked behind, which no one remediates. And actually, they represent a significant amount of risk in a business. So when you do that analysis, that's there. The other bit, by the way, which is super, super important, it should never happen, but we see it everywhere, is the amount of bloatware. So this is software that is sat in an environment which is never used. It's never used, but guess what? It's generating vulnerabilities all the time and generating risk to the business. Now, actually, there's probably, easily 5% of software in the business based on our research, which is bloatware, things that you should just remove, but people can't remove it because they don't know when it was last used. They don't understand the context of why it was installed and therefore are paranoid. A really good example of that, by the way, is Java. How many organizations have old copies of Java running on desktops and servers, which frankly they're terrified to remove. They're probably paying Oracle for, and it's just sat there doing nothing apart from generating risk. And these are all things you need to consider. It's not about patching, it's about understanding that full holistic approach. So I went off a bit of a rant there,
No, well, I
apologies.
think it outlines exactly you say. It's that, it's looking at it holistically, and making sure that you're working on it from two different ends. I mean, reducing the amount of things that can be vulnerable, to explicitly what needs to be in the environment, and actually, we're obviously talking about Mythos here, and one of the things that have clearly come out as we've had this conversation is, the approach to Mythos isn't unique to Mythos. It's something that's there already, which is cyber hygiene. And one of those, if you look at the CIS, it's top 18 now. And some of those top critical controls, understand your inventory of your assets, inventory of your software, and making sure that it's only the software that is actually needed for the business. Or for that specific requirement, which is all about then reducing that risk, and I think that is something that's is forgotten. Probably don't see enough
100%.
of people aligning to the CIS top 18, even just doing an occasional review against it to see where they are. Because I think for me, it's a very prioritized, focused framework that should sit nicely alongside an ISO 27001 and not be a either or.
Yeah, the amount of browsers we find on servers, but I won't go there. That's another topic altogether. Okay, so. We've talked quite a bit about the challenge, but what's our recommendations for actually getting ahead of these threats that we're seeing accelerating our businesses? Now, we already talked about the AI detection. I talked about it earlier around using the models to create better defenses, to create detections in the platforms faster, signatures, whatever you may call it. But also to get better asset inventory. Richard, you mentioned that asset. Asset is con absolutely key. If you don't, I mean, it's such an overused phrase, but if you don't know what you have, how can you secure it? And it's never been more true. With the explosion of devices being attached to our networks and our networks being continually open to other business opportunities, third parties, etc., the asset piece is absolutely fundamental. And the other thing as well is an asset doesn't mean a server or a laptop. Of course, they're part of that. But it can mean so many more things. An asset is now an identity. An asset is now a cloud resource. There are a huge volume of things which we need to be able to, as cyber professionals, detect, categorize, and manage. So, think outside the box when it comes to assets because it's not just servers anymore.
No, completely agree.
The next thing we obviously need to do is hyper prioritize. We talked about exposure management briefly, we mentioned, but this is really where this comes into play. So if we prioritize the vulnerabilities and the misconfigurations on our environment. How do we then make that business aware? How do we then make that actually, are these vulnerabilities we found, are they, can they actually ever be exploited in my business? I'm going to show you something in a moment to kind of highlight this. But if we can't prioritize down to that level, what we could be doing is focusing in the wrong places. And if the models are building these huge volumes of vulnerabilities and we're not focusing in the right places, we're going to upset our IT colleagues, number one. Because we're going to be sending them massive spreadsheets of stuff to fix with zero context. And at the end of the day, they're not going to do it. We're just going to get a massive backlog and it can cause problems. So we have to be able to prioritize with business context and with true exploitability assigned. Now, the other part of this is around 0-day remediation. And for years, people have been very nervous around this. And this is where I mention around, IT operations and security coming together. We cannot live in a world anymore where we don't also remediate. We just can't. When AI models are building threats, building vulnerabilities, chaining them together, we have to remediate at AI speed. We have to use machines to fix machines. It's just the reality that the world we're in. And in fact, every briefing I end up doing, we end up discussing this. And this is normally the point we spend the most time on. But then it's about how do we build that confidence for you to do that? Now, we haven't got time today to go into that, but there are lots of ways in which you can build remediation strategy to do that. I will give you a quick stat here. So in the last 12 months, Qualys, with our agents, we've actually deployed about 150 million patches globally. Now, of that 150 million, 40 million were actually done autonomously. Zero human impact, zero human touch. Some did they raise services tickets? Some did, but they were done in the background. They auto-approved just for records. You have to start changing the way you approach this. Otherwise, you are not going to be able to, your business will not keep up. Whatever size the business you are, you will not be able to keep up. You need to understand your risk appetite in this space and push that to enable the ability to fix things in real time.
And it's, as you say, it's an absolute no-brainer. And the only way that we're going to be successful, because it's not just lowering, AI is not just lowering that barrier to entry for attackers, particularly sort of the low-skilled attackers, but it's that ability to orchestrate autonomous attacks over, a large target base. That we've already seen last year of organizations utilizing it in loads of different ways. I think there was an attack on AWS, or not AWS specifically, but breaching Fortinet firewalls in AWS. All not through vulnerabilities, but through being able to target them in the right way. And if that's happening on, facing us, the only way that we're going to operate is if we can put the abilities and controls in place to be able to remediate, as you say, autonomously, because it can't wait for us to take a look at it. Can't wait for us to decide. It needs to be as soon as possible. And we look at those volumes of alerts that you presented on at the very start of this. And although, yes, a smaller number is very much weaponized, how are we going to deal with 50,000 vulnerabilities that are discovered and released if we're going through those and it's there is a manual element to any processes? So yeah. Maybe that's a follow-up webinar for us to do, Matt, is on how do you get to that confidence level in terms of your strategy to make it entirely autonomous.
Yeah, no, we'd love to do that because, the technology is moving on so fast. We're actually now using AI to give you confidence scores in terms of patches, so you can actually make decisions based on that. But again, much bigger topic. I won't cover it now. But I will, if it's okay, just share with you a real life example. Now, this was a very large organization, so I'll make that statement now. But in this example, we analyzed data from four different vendors, Qualys, Wiz, CrowdStrike, and SentinelOne. And all those four vendors effectively had 62.5 million security findings. And the CISO at the time said, look, just work on a basis of like 50 cents, 50 euros per finding to fix it. And let's just put some numbers against the impact of actually trying to remediate these things, in a sensible time frame. So we then went through that remediation process that I talked about. So the first step, as we mentioned, is how many are weaponized, and you can see immediately it drops to 4% of findings were actually weaponized in this customer's environment, which is a massive drop. Again, I'm not suggesting we don't fix everything. What I'm suggesting is we build a strategy that enables us to do it at the right time that suits our business requirements. When you then add business criticality, is this an internet-facing application? Is there a database running on it? Is it part of your Active Directory domain, etc.? That number drops to kind of sub 1% of that original 62.5 million. So we're now talking about there's actually 304,000 findings we need to fix at pace. Now that's all good and well, and I've kind of alluded to this as we've been going through the presentation. But again, that doesn't mean there's 304,000 ways we can be exploited. What it means is findings. Now, findings aren't truly exploitable because we haven't confirmed yet whether they are. So there are tools like breach attack simulation tools, etc. Qualys has taken a slightly different approach. We're actually doing it in real time. And when we do that, we actually drop that 304K number down to 60,000. So these are the vulnerabilities that can actually be exploited because your compensating controls have failed. It means that we have been able to send a non-weaponized payload from the outside of your organization to the inside and get a ping back from a device or an application which has a vulnerability. So if you are going to prioritize your efforts, this is where we're highly recommending. This is where you spend your money. This is the ones where you generally need to get everyone out of bed and go and fix stuff. But this is what true exposure management is about. This is actually your exposure, not a theoretical risk as is shown to the left.
That very much brings it to life. As I say, not going from theoretical, but actually case study. The benefits and the reason why you have to prioritize, and not just on criticality of the asset.
Yeah, because you're not going to find that 60,000 if you just look directly at 62.5 million to start with, right? You're going to get lost in the noise and you're going to end up going around in circles, and that's the challenge. So you've got to have that. And this is what we mean hyper prioritizing. This is really getting down to the nuts and bolts of what true risk is. You know, where are my compensating controls failing? Which ones are failing, and what do I need to do about it? So, if it's okay, Richard, can I just do one quick shameless plug for what we're doing at Qualys?
Well, you can, because I think knowing what slide was coming next, I think although this from a Qualys perspective, I think it is generally where we need to see our approaches move away from being that classic TVM to actually being around risk operations center that is focused specifically on risk. And exposure, and getting to the point where we've got 61,000, issues, dealt with.
Yeah, the very simple, and I won't go into massive detail on this at all, I promise. The very simple concept is, you know, we are all driving cars in security, right? When we have an incident, the incident goes to a SOC. We're looking in the rearview mirror, we're dealing with a problem. We go out, we address it, we have teams set up, we have tools, et cetera. What Qualys is trying to bring to market is the front windscreen model. We are looking forwards. We're looking at the risk in our business. We're able to measure them, measure the impact, and get the right process in place and automation to remove those before they become a rear view mirror. So the Risk Operations Center is not a product. Yes, we enable it with Qualys technology, but you can do it with other technology as well if you so see fit. It's really about bringing the IT operations, IT security together to actually build that remediation, put automation in, use agentic AI where appropriate to automate things, and actually build that continuous process of managing risk in your business. And also looking at the financial impact. So just because there is a risk doesn't mean financially it makes sense to fix it. You might carry risk. Everyone does. We're never going to get to zero. So how do you bring all those things together? The Risk Operations Center is the concept, and we're happy to share more details on that, on how Qualys is looking at this, and super happy to pick up later with anyone if they want to ask questions. So I won't go any more than that, Richard, I promise.
No, but I mean, I think it would all make sense to that that's the path that we should be heading on, regardless of underlying technology vendor, to achieve it. And actually, as you can see on there, it's not just a Qualys problem to solve. It needs input from all different places. But obviously, you guys are underpinning it in this instance. Brilliant. Okay, well, thank you for walking us through that. I'm actually going to do a shameless plug as well myself, but it is on our upcoming webinars and events. So we have a couple of well, we've got obviously our series of webinars that will continue, and the next one up is AI security imperative, risk threats, and practical defenses coming up on the 16th. But we also have extended our run of Security First conferences. So actually, they say coming soon, I think we have dates for some of them, so I think they'll be shared on LinkedIn and other channels. But we're bringing that to Brussels in September, Calgary in October, and Barbados. Actually, I think Calgary's now in November, if I remember actually correctly. So it's a moving picture, and then Barbados also in the autumn. So if you're in those regions, keep an eye out, and we'll provide sign-ups as soon as we can. So last thing left before we close off is the much promised Q&A, and we do have quite a few questions that have come in to test. I'm going to say to test you, Matt, but actually to test both of us. See if we get some answers. So the first one is, even with this increased level of threat vulnerability detection, does the strength of security control layers not still determine how much success cyber attackers can achieve in terms of compromising systems and environments? In other words, does Mythos make it exponentially easier to break through controls layers?
I don't think, as I talk through the slides, I don't think it makes it exponentially easier. I think it lowers the barrier to entry. We talked about that. I think the ability to test your exposure is going to be key here, because as we've talked about, just having a finding doesn't mean you're at risk. We all carry misconfigurations in our environments, but it's testing those and making sure whether your defenses are truly doing what they're meant to do. Because there's lots of examples where we find things like, if someone will say, I've got latest EDR, I'm pretty well protected against kind of ransomware, and then we'll go out and we'll run a scan and we'll say, yeah, you are, but by the way, you've got two machines there which haven't got it enabled. And it's these simple things which let us down. And then frankly, it's nothing to do with AI. It's more to do with, building the right kind of, Richard, you talked about cyber hygiene, having that in place, doing the basics fundamentally right. And then if you do that, then the speed at which the detections come, you should be able to manage it as long as you're putting automation in place where it's appropriate. But I don't think it makes it infinitely worse. It just means we need to be on our game, and we cannot be lapsed, and we have to understand our assets, et cetera, which we talked about.
Perhaps not easier, but I think it's all about it will be around volume that we are going to be challenged with. It's all sort of breaking through control layers. I think what will we see, as I talked about, Palo Alto seeing, we're seeing a 10 times increase in the amount of patches that they're delivering, which obviously shows that there's vulnerabilities there that need to be addressed. So do we need to think actually more about our control layers that are in there of our that we're defending upon? But then also, what are the types of control layers? That slide that I think the last slide we the second to last slide we finished on there of that case study of an organization, bringing that down overall, one of those things that brings it down is it publicly accessible? What is the, what's the attack path and chain that's there? Segmentation being, quite a key security control that you could say is quite basic in general. Blocking access except for on a, on the privileges or the principle of least privilege. So I think, the answer is, no, but yes, is what I'd say. No, it's not going to make it exponentially easier to break through, but yes, the volume is going to increase. That barrier to entry is naturally going to cause that to happen. The potential volume, I say the potential, the volume of vulnerabilities being discovered, the lag to patches becoming available is going to mean that your controls are going to be even more important. We can see vulnerabilities being, you can imagine a world where vulnerabilities are being disclosed at a rate of knots. There is only so much, reviewing, rewriting code to be able to create patches that can be done. So, that's the lag that's potentially going to be there. So, we are going to have to need to, have our fingers on the pulse, understand when there's something disclosed. Is there a patch for it? What are the compensating controls we need to put in place so we can mitigate that? So, I think
I think
that's
Richard,
why.
sorry, just jump in there really super quick. That's such a good point, that there won't be patches available. People will not be able to write patches quick enough to deal with the findings. So actually, we're going to have to get to a world, and actually, we've started doing the research, and as we've just released it in our platform, can we make a other an a another change in your environment which protects you against that particular type of exploit? Can you make a change the registry, or can you change a port setting, or whatever it might be? So you need to look at both these things. It's not just patching; it's about complete understanding of the risk associated and how you can block it.
Yeah, no, completely agree. So the next question, will AI-driven vulnerability discovery fundamentally change security operations?
No, it's almost it won't. You know, Rich, you've already said it, right? It's the volume and speed, and we're not going to get given. You know, if let's say the volume increases, you know, 10-20%, we're not going to give them 10-20% increase in our headcount to manage this, right? You know, I think that would be an ideal world, but it's not going to happen. So we've got to look at how we do that. So the changes will be our acceptance, the level of automation we're prepared, our risk appetite for automation is what's going to change, not the process, but what's our acceptance level. And I think most organizations, and I'll tell you a quick anecdote, right? So my CEO was driving on in his self-driving car in San Francisco, and WeGo, I can't remember, the autonomous taxi came alongside him. He had his car in Mad Max mode, and this autonomous car was trying to overtake him. And he said he sat there watching these two cars, the AI fighting with each other, trying to choose the lane. He said, if I'm choosing my life in this autonomous world, my cars, I think we can patch a an endpoint, you know, autonomously. So I think it's that appetite level and risk is changing rapidly.
Yeah. Indeed. Okay, right, moving on to the next question is how do you determine exploitability today?
So a good question. Firstly, you know, researchers, threat research, etc. You know, Qualys has 25 different threat feeds we pay for, which we use. I mentioned we have 300 of our own researchers. We find our own vulnerabilities. We publish those to the community. We do that good stuff. We're using AI engines now to accelerate that those findings, to accelerate that integration of data, so we can publish it faster back to the community, so they can do that. So I think there's lots of ways in which we're doing it. Could you just remind me the last bit of the question, Richard? Sorry.
Yeah. So it's determined exploitability today,
Yeah.
which you know,
Thank you.
obviously I'd say this probably came in on that slide talking about, well, actually which ones were actually, you know, the percentage that were
Yeah.
weaponized.
I got excited with the first part of the response.
Yes.
So the second part of that is, you know, what you have to be able to do is, if you imagine, right, we all need to have pen tests, right? We've been doing that for forever, and that's never going away. It's a super important part of our defensive strategy. But what we now have to do is automate some of those pen testing functions for those critical vulnerabilities. So what we're doing here at Qualys is we've built an engine called, which we call TrueConfirm. When we're getting detections which are narrowed down to these are high critical, they've been weaponized, we can actually test those by using our external scanning infrastructure and our agents going forwards. So we can test your controls and say, we'll try and send a dummy, non-weaponized, completely benign payload against your infrastructure and say, if we get a return response from that end device, we know your compensated controls have failed. So we know that you are truly exposed to that vulnerability. And this is like pen testing in real time, for want of a better expression, red teaming, whatever you want to call it, right? But we believe we need to get to a place. The kind of breach attack stimulation technologies that are out there trying to create a digital twin, etc. We don't think it's fast enough anymore. We think AI has changed the game again. And we think this is probably one of the few approaches that might help solve the problem. I'm sure there's others out there, by the way. I'm not saying we're the only horse in the race, but that's just our approach.
Yeah, and there's that two views. It's, you know, is something actually weaponized and being used, but also what is your unique exploitability profile in terms of what assets are actually exposed to that, and you say those compensating controls. So we've got two more questions left. One is, what role does automation play when patching is not possible?
Yeah, again, you know, I kind of probably answered a little bit of this just now, when I went on my patching rant. But patching is not just about a software patch. You know, there are multiple elements to this. You know, it might be that actually it might be a reboot, by the way, if something as basic as that's required. You know, how many times we've scanned environments and the customer said, I've patched this, and we go, well, you may have patched it, but you haven't rebooted it, so the patch hasn't taken effect, so you are still vulnerable. You know, what other compensating controls can you deploy, you know, in real time using automation? So, you know, there are some elements to this, but maybe you want to think about very carefully. But if it's change of ports setting, is it update a registry setting, or maybe it's can we deploy a new version of their ADR? I don't know. There's any number of elements to this, but what Qualys is doing is publishing that. So when we get a detection, we also publish the ways in which you can remediate that, whether it be via a patch or via other mechanisms. And then it's up to you as a business to decide how you want to utilize that data, to whether you want to automate that fix or you want to put it through your normal change control process, etc. So again, we're not forcing people down this road. We're not saying it's the only option, but the ability is there.
Perfect. All right, very last question before we close up. How do you help organizations find AI models rising in your environment?
So, okay, a little story here. So we were asked to help one particular company who thought they had about 50 models running in their business. We use our existing infrastructure, our existing scanners and agents that are deployed. We've got, tens of millions of agents around the world. We actually found 2,000 models running in their environment, which was a little bit of a shock to them. We've discovered AI models like they're assets effectively. We discover them, but we can also test them and ensure that they are configured correctly. We can test them for bias. We can see if they can be jailbroken. So there's a whole host of processes. And there's actually an OWASP top 10 around AI, by the way, which we enable through our platform. So there's a whole host of things you can do there. But the number one, again, back to basics, let's find out what you've got running in your business. And that's the most important thing. Get your cloud connectors set up, scan your environment, make sure you know where they are. Then make sure whether they should be there or not, firstly, because removing them might be the better option rather than trying to go from there.
Shadow IT driven by Shadow AI is that next challenge to visibility that's on the horizon with very enthusiastic people, vibe coding apps, wanting to deploy systems and servers wherever they can spin it up that that produces that risk. So it clearly is important to understand what AI is actually in your environment, where it's being utilized so that you can stand a chance of mitigating it. So excellent. Well, Jot, we are pretty much coming up on the hour now, we've answered the Q&A. So that just leaves me to say thank you very much to everybody that has joined today. As I mentioned, this has been recorded if you need to watch back or share. And then lastly, say thank you very much to Matt for joining me. Thank you, Matt. Thank
Thank
you,
you. It's been a
everybody.
pleasure. Anytime. Thanks, Richard. Goodbye.
Cheers.